Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Hey, thanks for listening and welcome back to another episode of the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson.
And I'm Mark Vila, and today we're with Don Copeland to talk about direct-to-garment printing.
We went way into the wilds of the sales department to recruit the product manager for DTG, for Cold Essie. And honestly, like Don, I don't want to toot his horn too much because he does that plenty himself. But Don is, you know, really like a founding father of DTG in the Americas. So I think that's kind of what we want to start with.
Yeah, right. Well, and I agree. And I remember when I started in this industry, I'd sold direct to garment printers for a while, and I would meet with Don, you know, and his team once a month or a little bit more. And I mean, I gained so much knowledge from having known him early. I knew nothing about the industry at all.
Right.
And I would come to these meetings, and he would talk a little bit, and some other folks that were players in, you know, here would talk, and I just, he's a wealth of information.
So I've got a challenge for him right off the bat for the first thing that he talks about today, and that is a lot of our listeners have no idea what we're talking about when we say DTG. So would you do just like a brief 3 minute, what the heck is DTG?
3 minutes for me?
Yes. That's why I said it's a challenge.
Or two. Wow. It takes me 3 minutes to talk about how to do a 2 minute egg. DTG stands for direct to garment printer.
Right.
And to kind of reduce it to the simplicity, it's inkjet printing directly onto a finished garment.
Okay.
Mostly of the cotton persuasion, or natural fibers, though there are some advances in printing on polyesters. But it connects to it's a printer that connects to your computer, very much so like your standard desktop inkjet printer, using very similar technologies at the actual print side of it.
Okay.
Controlled by some pretty cool software that generates an underbase, a white ink underbase, which is something we probably will get into later, but something that you would use to be able to print on a dark shirt.
Right.
All right. It does things like control your colors, color matching, as well as controlling how much ink is going down to control the intensity, as well as giving you costing and just managing your job, sending your jobs out to the printer.
So fundamentally, it's basically how, if you order a custom t-shirt online, you know, there's a really good chance if you're just ordering one, two, or three, four shirts with a design on it, that it's been printed with a DTG printer or direct to garment printer.
Yeah, I mean, doing short run t-shirts of a custom sense,
right,
basically is it's limited to some type of digital process.
Okay.
If it's a simple one or two color job, it could be something like heat applied graphics, like Coleman and Company sell, you know, the cut and press system.
Okay.
That's great for one color, maybe two color short run stuff. You start getting multiple colors together and that, it gets a little hectic and difficult to align. It can be done with transfers, you know, inkjet or laser transfers, but those are not something that typically people are going to buy online when you can go down to your local Office Depot and buy some paper to throw in your laser or into your inkjet printer. So if you're buying it from a viable entity online, custom, it most likely is done with a direct-to-garment process because it's the simplest, it's the most effective way and the most most cost-effective way to do short-run, high-color, custom-type designs.
Right. So I know like Zazzle and Cafe Press and a lot of the companies that you actually hear radio commercials for now, when they print a shirt that you order, it's typically done with DTG.
Yeah, and when you, it's almost like, I guess, from what Don is saying, if you can print it on a piece of paper, you can print it on a t-shirt.
Yeah, whether or not it'll look good depends on what you're printing, but yeah, you can definitely do it.
Well, Excel files.
Right, Excel files, yeah.
We joke about that. We actually did at a show, I was at one of our early shows, and people just, they weren't getting it. And so we actually did print out a spreadsheet on a t-shirt.
Wow.
Just to explain it, so it's explained to people that yes, it can be done.
Right. It's a printer.
It's a printer, okay. And you know, it's that would be a really boring shirt, mind you.
Hey, you never know. You could be an accountant or something like that. And really, really
which means it would still be a boring shirt.
Good point. Okay, good point.
But no, it absolutely, it's an inkjet printer
right.
That will reproduce at the quality that you feed it. And, you know, I'm big on these phrases I repeat, but too many people get into the industry and they think that the printer makes them an artist.
Right.
And as I've said multiple times, buying the printer makes you no more of an artist than buying the Rachel Ray knives off the Food Network makes you a chef.
Right. The example that I always use is just because you have Microsoft Word does not mean you're a book author.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good analogy. It's a good analogy.
It is. The good news is that if you can produce good graphics for screen printing or embroidery or signage, you're a shoo-in for direct-to-garment. It's very much so. Just some subtle differences, just like it is for each one of those. But it is not anything that's just a whole new world of thinking. If somebody hasn't screen printed, they shortcut a huge portion of what is required of designing within the screen, we call it. You can think outside the screen. You know, you don't have to think in three colors or four colors or whatever your budget allows for screen setups. And so you can kind of go wild with your design thought because the printer can print it.
Right. So for our newbies out there who, you know, are listening to this kind of thing for the first time, screen printing is a completely different process. What's the difference between the two?
I mean, screen printing, yes, it is a different process. Screen printing is, best way to describe it, is an analog process as opposed to digital.
Okay.
It's going to be limited to a finite number of colors. And to get those colors ready to be put onto the shirt, you had to go through a whole process of actually separating the artwork into the base colors. Then you still do print using a printer. You'll print out a film, which is a positive of the artwork.
Like a transparency.
Kind of like a transparency of vellum. There's things like that. And then you will expose a screen, which the actual artwork is laid against.
Right.
And what happens is it's a photosensitive material, so where the light comes through, the screen hardens up. Where the dark parts of that film were, it doesn't harden up. Then you mount that on a press. You align the colors up, and we haven't printed a shirt yet, guys.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process.
That's why certainly short run is that you can't match it. There's no way you can do a four-color job, one-color screen printing, and expect to make money.
Right.
It's just not practical.
I was going to say, Don had mentioned about some of the early shows, and I didn't know if you wanted to jump into the history of DTG yet.
Yeah, let's do that. The last thing I'll say is, like, you know, and it's a good lead-in because before DTG, the way you got a shirt printed was with screen printing.
Yeah,
I mean, that was pretty much it to get a good professional quality shirt.
Or transfers, and, you know, transfers, and even now, transfers now, let's go back 10 years. I mean, the genesis of direct-to-garment printing goes back, 20 years, all right? The practical side of it, when it really became or started to be commercially viable, happened in October of 2004 at the SGIA show in Minneapolis, when two major companies introduced machines. One of them is the now defunct U.S. Screen. It used to be the U.S. At that point, it was U.S. Screen Print Institute. They later changed their name to incorporate digital into their name before they went under, and they came out with a machine called the Fast T-Jet, which was a modified printer from Japan that was used to print on all kinds of three-dimensional objects, paper blocks, like, you know, the papers you see next to your phone, pieces of wood. They actually printed on food with it, with food grade. I went to training there, and they printed on hamburger buns that we were eating with food grade food.
I would pass on that.
Yeah.
I would really pass on that.
Yeah. The other company was Mamaki. And so that was at the SGIA show, October 2004. Shortly thereafter, we, as a company, got involved with it, actually in January, with U.S. Screen as a distributor for them, and the DTG group actually itself, that is the DTG brand we now sell, actually kicked off in October of 2005 when Scott Coleman, the president of Coldesi, and I journeyed to Singapore to the ITMA show, which is a international textile show. It was over in Singapore, and we met up with the other companies that are now basically the DTG group.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the short history. But from that point then, you had about three or four companies that were in the marketplace as the marketplace started to grow. White ink didn't hit the marketplace till November of 06 when U.S. Screen introduced white ink. November of 2005 when they introduced white ink.
Let's talk about like that before. So you've got a couple of brands getting into the market. They're all using the same technology. What are kind of the differences in the direction that they're going?
I mean, at that point, you had the T-Jet was a modified Epson printer. Okay. It was straight out of the box modified Epson printer with one of the first truly renegade but Epson endorsed developers that they had helped Epson with some things, and they kind of pulled the thorn out of the paw of the lion, and they were in the backyard of Epson Corporate over in Nagano area of Japan. Mamaki has been a developer of printers as an OEM for a number of years, and they just basically modified technology to do direct-to-garment printers.
And they did like a lot of large format stuff.
They had large format stuff, and what they did is they had a very large-sized direct-to-garment printer. They printed a very average size, so that was kind of one of the downfalls of the unit.
Okay.
But they just modified technology from there, and then very shortly afterwards, Brother jumped in. They were probably the first pure ground-up built machine.
Okay.
But CMYK only printed on light shirts. In fact, they stayed that way for a number of years.
Right, and so that's a key, is the beginning of direct-to-garment printing was you could only print on a light-colored shirt.
Absolutely.
Or you could print on a dark-colored shirt, but it would just look bad.
Well,
why is that?
Well, I was going to say, before we go into that, so what you're, to kind of layman term it down for anybody who might not have picked it up, they would take an Epson printer, take it apart, and put in different parts so a T-shirt could go into it, right? Is that kind of a simple way to put it? Or?
If we want to use a really cool word there, they would repurpose the printer.
Okay.
Right. If you think about your printer, it consists of two things. You have a print head that goes back and forth, and you have a sheet of paper that goes through it. They basically would remove the components that made the paper go through and either modify those to drive a bed that brought a shirt through the machine, or interpret that information and use a different motor to drive that. That was the very most basal. In fact, the initial T-Jets used the actual motor that was used to do a print feed for sheets of paper to drive a fairly large bed just by putting a pinch roller on it.
So just because it's easy to say doesn't mean that it's easy to do.
Never.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not going to be able to effectively take apart your Epson printer that you buy, you know, at Office Depot and open up a custom T-shirt business.
Yeah, I mean, these people were, engineers, I guess, for lack of a better way
to put it. They're very sciencey.
You know? Yeah.
They're very sciencey.
The name of the company that developed the Fast T-Jet was a company called Mastermind, and they were very well named. The old man who was the head engineer of the company was truly a mastermind, and he was able to do what he was because he was able to provide information to Epson for them to use in their regular printers. So they blessed his process of hacking their printers after that fact.
All right, well, we're going to spend a few more minutes talking about, because I want to talk about white ink and why that's important before we get into the more practical stuff about where the business is now and how you can make money.
Yep.
So what is the big freaking deal behind using white ink? I mean, why is that?
Can you
say
that
thing
on the radio?
I can.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a podcast, so we can say whatever we want.
Right.
we're not going to, though.
That's right, because then we'd have to record all of this again, right?
Yes, it's true.
All right. So what is the big deal
about white ink? I mean, what's
white ink revolutionized the industry because it allow you to now address dark shirts. I believe it was November of 2005. U.S. Screen had been working with an ink manufacturer, pushing them to develop white ink. I mean, one of the upsides to U.S. Screen was Scott Fresner, who was the CEO there, was kind of one of the gurus of early high-end screen printing, doing a thing called salt false or pseudo process. So he really understood how to get really the max out of screen printing, out of minimal. And so he really pushed him. He knew how important dark shirts were.
Okay.
And so he pushed, and ultimately, an ink manufacturer, DuPont, developed a white ink for him.
Okay.
And gave him a 1-year exclusive. Meanwhile, the industry matured under them as the Fast T-Jets were selling white ink that was marginally functionable.
Right.
And in their defense, we all had to learn it. The whole industry had to learn it. It was a genesis of this.
Yeah.
And so, underscoring that, did the DTG brand, some other brands, develop some pretty solid printers, still not printing white ink. And then a year later when an exclusive came out, everybody was at full stride on it.
Right.
It was very specialized process at that point, though.
But the motivation is that if you walk through a mall right now, just count the number of people wearing white graphic tees. And then count the number of people wearing black or dark gray graphic tees.
Or blue or orange.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess maybe, Don, what I would have to say is, because remember, when I first came in, maybe one of the questions to think about, someone might say, is if I had a black, say, piece of paper that I would give, my kid to, and they had a yellow crayon, they could just put the yellow over the black. So why doesn't that work with the T-shirt printer?
Because crayons don't work on T-shirts.
Okay.
Well, they do.
Okay, so
but they wash
out. I'm probably, if you hear smacking sounds in the background, you got to get semi-technical for this, though, to understand. There are two different types of lights, basically, that our eyes receive. There's reflected light, and then there's illuminated light, basically. And the way that your inkjet printer on your desktop works is there's four colors there, going completely against everything you learned in kindergarten,
right?
Which was blue, yellow, and red, right? And you made all your colors from that. Well, in the digital printing world, everything is made from cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. However, the colors are not solid like the colors that you learned to mix in kindergarten. They're translucent, which means they actually allow light to pass through them. And the way that you get to see the colors with your eyes is actually the light comes down, it hits the ink, goes through the ink, it hits the substrate behind it, the first solid object that is opaque, that the light doesn't pass through, that reflects back, comes through those translucent inks, and then illuminates, and that's where you get your color.
It's why if you put a white T-shirt up against a dark-colored wall, you'll see, what you see is kind of a mix of the colors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, certainly what you're getting is when you print on, let's take an example, I want to print on a yellow shirt.
Right.
If I print black on a yellow shirt, it's perfectly fine. I'm going to see black. And if I see blue, I'm going to mostly see blue. If I print a pale red to a medium red on a yellow shirt, I'm going to see orange. Because I have light that's coming through, hitting the ink, hitting the yellow substrate, reflecting a yellow light back. And if you've ever had a flashlight, and you put one of those little discs on top of it, mm-hmm. you go color. If you put two discs on top of it, like a red disc and a blue disc, you now have purple, right?
Yeah.
Same concept is happening there. So in order to get true colors on colors very far, not even very far off center from white, you have to put a white down so that you go from that same base foundation color of white to get the colors you want.
And I've heard Don say an answer similar to this before, and I find that to be a fascinating, actually, concept behind it. Like, when I first learned that, I was like,
that doesn't matter.
That is kind of cool, that it's like that what you're seeing, is the shirt is part of what you're seeing.
Yes.
When you wouldn't think about it that way necessarily. But that's why I asked that. I thought it was a really cool answer.
To wrap your head around it, get some colored paper and throw it in your inkjet printer and print some designs on them and print them on white. And you start to get the idea of what happens. And there are some people who do some great designs creatively using colored shirts, lighter colored shirts without white ink. But it's understanding what's going to happen to those colors.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, they don't want to think that much, and they really shouldn't have to. So that's where white ink comes in. You print on a lighter colored shirt, if you put a white foundation down, you don't have to put as much.
Right.
I'll go to painting your room. And if this room had a dark purple wall, as opposed to the hot pink that you have in here right now,
mm-hmm.
We would have to put down a lot more white ink than we would if it was a light green and was going to, or paint, to change colors.
So far you've talked me out of it. If I want to go into the custom T-shirt business, there's no way I'm going to get a printer that just prints on white shirts.
Oh, I thought you were talking about changing the paint,
in
your room.
No, he's going to keep the paint.
I will be keeping the paint. But now I'm printing white shirts. What does that mean for the printer, and what does that mean for kind of the profitability?
Well, certainly, if you are the master salesman,
right.
You are going to sell people on light colored shirts because it is easier, it's faster, you use less ink. However, you're ignoring the market. We actually did an informal survey at one of the trade shows. We went around and talked to all the major players in the T-shirt. Forget about all of us doing machines, anything.
Right.
The guys who sell the T-shirts.
The blank T-shirts.
The fruit of the looms, those type of people, all right? And ask them what percentage of the shirts they sold in a digital world would require white ink. The number was staggering. It was close to 80%.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so even if you bite on half of that. You are walking 40% of the business, and I guarantee you the real number is 50% or more.
Yeah.
If you are not printing on dark shirts.
Right.
So it's a necessary evil. The upsides are is as the industry has matured, the process has matured, the inks have gotten better, the pre-treats have gotten better. We've gotten better.
Right. We I'll say he said necessary evil because in the early days, it was kind of a drama to use white ink. It was kind of a drama because we didn't have a down pat.
Well, if you didn't take into account wind direction, barometric pressure, and moon phase,
right.
it was almost impossible, right? It certainly was. The what we call the window of success on pre-treatment, which is really one of the critical elements of white. If you can't pre-treat well,
right,
and consistently, you're not going to get good results. In the early days, you hit a point where you finally got good white ink, but if you went 10% past that on your pre-treat, you potentially going to have bad washability.
Right. And by the way, you want to explain what pre-treat is just for those that are playing along at home?
Sure. The pre-treat is essentially a liquid treatment that you're putting onto the garment ahead of time, so when you put the white ink down, it does not soak into the shirt and turn into a mixture of white and red making pink. It stays as a solid white layer.
Primer.
It's a primer.
It is. It's a primer. When you're printing on a dark shirt, you have to have a foundation. When I'm printing onto a light-colored shirt, I want the ink to absorb into the fibers.
Okay.
When I print on a dark shirt, I need a foundation for those colors to sit upon.
Right.
And so the pre-treatment actually causes a chemical change in the white ink, which makes the white ink disperse its liquid out, and it stays in a solid-ish type of form on the top of the shirt prior to curing, so it now will receive the colors.
Okay.
The magical word for years has been called, it crashes the white ink. And it basically makes the liquids fall out and leaves the solids, which are the pigments and the things that bind to the shirt on the top so you can print. You can actually watch your shirt's been printed with white ink, and the first inch or so after the printhead goes by, it's shimmering. You know, an inch later, it's starting to become less shimmery, and by the time it ejects out of the printer, you can physically touch it, and it's kind of got like clay dryness to it. It's not perfectly dry, but it's not soaking wet.
Gotcha. So I want to go into the custom t-shirt business.
Mm-hmm.
I've decided that I have to have white ink because, you know, frankly, I'm smart enough to get into the custom t-shirt business. And the process is going to be that I'm going to do if I want to print on a dark shirt is I spray a shirt with pre-treat. By the way, we've got a lot of videos on this on the Custom Apparel Startups Facebook group and on our YouTube channel. You're gonna pre-treat the shirt. You're going to heat press it to make sure that the pre-treat is on the shirt. You're going to load it into the printer, and you're going to print.
Well, what do you need me here for, then?
That I was just going to say.
You solved it.
Just trying to break it down, because I
got to get up to my desk and write your invoice up for you.
I'm picturing people, like listening to us when we're talking about the technology and, you know, all that stuff, and that's great, because it's important for people to know where we are right now. And I think that's kind of what's next. I mean, we're, you know, we started off with a jerry-rigged kind of print process that doesn't print on white ink. Then we started white ink that was kind of problematic, and now we've got it down pat. As long as you do your maintenance right on your DTG printer, which is really important. Now, what would you say about the way things are right now as far as DTG printers go? What's the technology like? What's the market like?
I mean, the marketplace has certainly matured in all aspects, not just hardware, not just software. It's been an evolution of knowledge, too. I mean, I look back at training manuals that I wrote 8, 9, 10 years ago, and I cringe at stuff that I actually put in writing that I told people to do. But that's where we were as an industry. That's all we knew. So we understand how to maintain the machines better. We understand the things that cause issues, because this industry was immature in just a fluid dynamics and understanding, you know, the actual what printers do.
Right.
All
right.
So a lot of that, you know, we would tell people to do excessive head cleanings.
Right.
Well, excessive head cleanings actually disrupt the ink. Yeah, and, you know, and so those things are gone. But, yeah, I would say that we're at a point now where the average user who is attentive can use a machine, be pretty successful with it
at a
acceptable failure rate of garments.
Right.
And pick it up fairly quickly. I mean, you're going to have to. Are you going to just go pick up some guy off the street and turn him into a t-shirt guru? No. But most people who come to us and come to our competitors in this industry looking to get into it, are there for a reason. You know, they have some graphics background. They have some background in the apparel industry, or, you know, they understand this stuff to some level.
Right.
So it is certainly achievable for the average person to pick up one of these machines and within, you know, 30 to 60 days to be pretty doggone proficient with it enough that they can start producing sellable artwork on dark shirts. And I've had a number of customers that were just chomping at the bit when they got a machine that under oath have promised not to try to print dark shirts, but in an hour or two after they got the machine, they're printing light shirts.
Right.
So it is doable.
So they're making money.
Mm-hmm. The key is be realistic in your setup. I just was in a demo earlier with a couple guys who are going to start a business today. They were talking about it, and their start date is to be ready for Thanksgiving to be making shirts.
Right.
I said, yeah, good. You need to have the machine in place by mid to late September. They don't have a lot of experience in the apparel side. They're tattoo guys. And so right. They have some graphics, but they have the learning process of just handling shirts, and they're obviously wanting to do some oddball positioning. So give yourself time, and you will find that you can succeed just because you start walking and then jogging and then running. Too many people will want to jump into this at a full run. And it's a recipe for failure, because just like if you were in a race and you were running a marathon, you took off running, and if you fell down 100 yards from the start line and you skinned your knees all up, you're bleeding, you're not going to finish the marathon.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. But if you're taking off at the right speed, build a pace up, and then got going, by the time you hit that mid, you're at a stride. That's the way it is with this, too. Take your time, learn the process, screw up some shirts.
Right.
Don't buy a machine and already have orders waiting for it.
That's what I was just going to talk about.
And I think we've even talked about that a little bit before.
In other podcasts.
If we have, if we've got embroiderers listening, which I'm sure we do, it's not that much different. When you get that embroidery machine, if you don't know much about it, you're not digitizing right away. You're not learning how to sew on different garments right away. There's always a learning curve, but that's why you're a professional. That's why you're making money to do it. Is it takes a little bit of time to learn.
Right. And there are different processes involved, right? I mean, you either have to be good at graphics or have someone that is. Like, because you don't know Photoshop just because you buy a direct-to-garment printer.
But I have the Rachel Ray knives.
Yeah, I mean,
you also have to be able to, like, know the difference, you know, or you'll learn the difference between what looks good on your computer screen and what looks good on a T-shirt. Because that's going to be frequently two different things. And then you're going to go through that process of realizing, well, if I do this in the RIP software, which sits between your graphics and your printer, then it looks better or it looks worse. Or, you know, I mean,
this brand of shirt prints better than this brand of shirt.
Right, that's right.
You know, and you're right. The whole shoot, it's you're learning an industry. If it was easy,
right,
everybody would do it. Right? And that's one thing we try to clarify. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but if this was as simple as you place an order with me, it arrives tomorrow, and you click print on that lovely graphic you downloaded from the internet,
right,
and then you had perfect shirts spit out, guess what? It wouldn't be worth doing, because we're in a stage with direct-to-garment where this is still a large growth, great potential to make profit marketplace. I will allude back to the sign industry, where 15 years ago, if you were in digital printing, you were making good money per square foot. The machines were very expensive.
Right.
And
we're talking about signs.
Signage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I'm gonna allude back to that as a picture. Yeah. And you had great opportunities to do all kinds of things with the machine. $20 a square foot for output. And there was two or three in a city like Tampa, right? Things like that. It was great times. Now, if you don't have a digital sign printer, you are not in the sign industry. We're still in that stage in direct-to-garment where it's not a have-to-have, so the potential is much higher. The cost of output is acceptable enough. People are willing to pay for digital custom output.
Yeah.
You're able to make good money. At some point, it's going to be a point where you have to have it.
Or you're not going to make any money.
You're not going to make any money, all right? So, you know, this is a good time. We're in the mature stage. The T-shirt industry is developing digitally slower than the sign industry, because the sign industry, you have about a 95% control over your substrate.
Right.
Because you print to a vinyl,
mm-hmm.
and then you apply the vinyl to something.
Right.
Right? In the direct garment industry, you could go get on Alpha Broder's website, Sanmar, any of those, order 100 shirts and have them come in. They could be from 27 different countries, made out of 32 different blends
right,
of material,
right.
mm-hmm.
and have different feel to the shirts, a different, what's the best?
Finish.
It's like, finish, like a substrate, you know,
yeah.
tighter weave, you know,
yeah.
more open. And you're going to get different results on all of them. So that's why it's been a little slower in developing. But the
yeah.
upside to that is our fat middle happy part where we can make money at it. If you're willing to learn it, it's going to be much larger than it was in the sign industry.
Right. So let's talk about the good stuff then.
Yeah, I have a great thing that's good. What I like about where we are now in the industry is we're at this point where automation is starting to come alive in it. I believe where before when I first got into it, the industry was still fairly new. You know, they were only on their the DTG Digital brand was only on their second machine, and pre-treating was only a manual process. Now you can get an automated machine to pre-treat
for
you.
So it's right every time.
And it's affordable.
Yeah, and the equipment is affordable. I remember,
yeah.
you know, the speed that you can print at was pretty, in price range, was almost the same now. How much faster is a machine now?
It's funny, I was just thinking that as you were saying that, the original kiosks, when we came out with white ink,
right.
I can remember my technicians coming back and my original, our service manager at the time, screaming when we wanted samples printed. A technician could turn over 7 black shirts every 2 hours for samples.
Wow.
Average print time on the sample we would send out. I'm not even going to say Surfshark because one of the techs will start speaking in tongues and flopping around on the ground back there. But it was a design that we printed. It took 17 plus minutes, almost 18 minutes to print one shirt.
Wow.
And
what's
about,
that like now?
About $6 worth of ink.
Wow.
That same design now, we could print in the area of about 4 to 5 minutes, and it would use somewhere in the area of $2.50 to $3 worth of ink.
Mm-hmm. And that's
so
a pretty...
half the cost and 4 times faster.
I was going to say, and those are pretty big designs that we print.
Yeah,
that you're
yeah,
printing
yeah.
for samples, you know,
right.
as well. It's all, whenever anyone asks Don, how long does it take to print a shirt, that's another 3-minute answer.
Right.
I know.
Right. How big is a graphic?
Yeah.
How many colors? So, you know, what's the, you know, there's 1,000 different versions.
But other things in regards to the automation is the maintenance on the machines is easier.
Yep.
It's less, it's a nice short instruction sheet to follow
yeah.
compared to, I just remember the long, you know, hauls of things. And then also little things, you know, we used to tell people you go to the store and you buy parchment paper, and that's what you use between the shirt and the heat press to cure.
Right.
And now we sell a silicone release paper that's cheaper, lasts longer,
yeah.
is the right size for your the platen on your heat press. You know, all these things are just automated and easy to use. You can buy ink in lots of different sizes.
Yeah.
So to me, that's exciting. You know, you're getting into an industry that's mature but hasn't even reached.
It's
the
full
point.
Potential.
Yeah, where yeah. like you mentioned, where you have to have it.
The software is so much better, too. The RIP software that we run now is just head and tails above the early stuff for dark shirts. Not only is it easier to use, more intuitive,
yeah.
much more powerful, and as the industry has matured, the software developers have become much better at understanding how to properly underbase. The way that we handle color matching now, much more mature. I mean, it used
okay.
to be they would use the same processes to do color matching for paper as they would for paper. And then some would even do it on paper. And now we actually take T-shirts, cut them into pieces, we apply them to a board, we actually go through the whole process with them as though we were printing our color schemes onto
right.
that they use to do profiling. So you're getting a much better workflow of good, consistent color.
Right.
I mean, I'll go back. Reds. We used to not be able to print red. We could use some beautiful tones of orange in this industry, and purple. It's the same
yeah.
thing. But the whole thought process for the software people has changed, and they've started to understand this unique beast that we have, where we're printing a spot color along with process colors on top of it.
Right.
Right. And they're starting to understand it's not like printing on paper, and they're
right.
being able to profile better too. We're getting better color matching.
Well, describe for me, you know, what a successful direct-to-garment printing business looks like. So I'm going to start a business. I want to be, in this custom DTG space.
Okay.
You know, what does it look like? I'm going to make a crap load of money doing X, Y, and
what? Z.
Okay.
Next question.
Done.
All right.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
The first thing you do is call me with your checkbook. No. Really, this is not going to be a 3-minute answer. The reality is first off, it depends on where you want to be with that.
Okay.
But the really successful businesses that are DTG specific are going to be niche based.
Well, like, give me an example of some actual customers that are doing really well with DTG.
By name?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, one specific one I think of is Mark Belitnikoff up in Erie, PA.
Yeah.
With First Amendment Tees.
Yes.
Fat Tees for short.
Yeah.
they have a mishmash. They do fulfillment for people who need fulfillment in direct to garment. They also do a niche marketplace. They do a lot of, I think it's mixed martial arts and karate and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they do. All right. They have, I think, 6 or 7 of our printers.
Yep.
And so they do a great mix of business there. Pretty good web presence for the whole U.S. marketplace, but a really good local presence for the mixed martial arts and stuff like that. Plus, they do some of that online. Another great example is the girls in Nashville at the Nesting Project.
Yeah, I was hoping you mentioned that.
They are in an affluent suburb of Nashville. Actually, okay. It's like where a lot of the pro athletes and stuff live. And they have started a niche market focusing mainly, initially, on the mommies and the brides, right? They do a lot of rustic type of prints, a lot of stuff on off colors like, you know, tans and yellows and things like that where they don't have to use a lot of white ink. But they also do some attitude stuff. A perfect example for them is they had come up with the shirts. And if you're a Facebook person, you've probably seen the shirts that say, I'm the oldest, I make the rules, I'm the middle, I had to live by the rules, I'm the youngest, I didn't have, the rules don't apply to me.
Okay.
Right? That was their design that somehow got picked up by a radio station and they posted it on their website. The people from Nesting Project found out, jumped in pretty quickly, posted their Etsy site from it, and they've done like $80,000 or $90,000 in t-shirt prints for that design this year.
Wow.
So they're in a niche market with the mommies and brides, but they also do some stuff that's parallel that, even though that would fit into the family type orientation, but they're very creative on their social presence. So they saw an opportunity through a link up there, and then it's perpetuated itself across the internet, and they're selling thousands of those shirts now.
Two different profiles that are completely different, but they're both great. I mean, I know Mark Belitnikoff. He was a steel worker, surprisingly enough, up in Erie, PA, and he left that to start his custom t-shirt business. And the Nesting Project, that is in a completely different market, using the same equipment, making just as much, if not more, money doing completely different things.
Oh, the stuff they sell is custom, and they're going to shoot me for this, but no, they sell them so people can see them on their website. Tea towels.
Okay.
They had one of the girls had found her grandmother's recipe for some kind of whatever, lemon meringue pie, call it what you will. And everybody has these sitting around. Their grandmother or their mother or their great aunt, somebody gave them something on a piece of, you know, blue lined paper or on a note card, right?
Yeah.
The recipe, and it's got some wear to it, and it's your grandmother's handwriting, and the beautiful flowery handwriting that's lost in our society today. Well, she scanned this in, put it on a tea towel, printed it out, scanned it, looked just like the original, and then she identified grandma's lemon meringue pie.
Nice.
Down at the bottom of it.
That's a great idea.
And she started showing them to people, and they were selling them for $15 a piece.
Yeah.
I doubt that the software registered the ink cost. It was that small of amount of ink cost. They had the tea towels. But, again, taking a product and using it in a very simple way to touch on a very niche, something very specialized. I mean, that is your grandmother's recipe.
Yeah.
And they went crazy with them at Mother's Day and things like that. So, I mean, thinking outside the box like that is just really where your opportunities are great, and making it custom, make it easy. They do wood printing. We've shown that stuff. They print out wedding invitations on pieces of wood. They do coasters as favors at the wedding with the information that they printed onto.
And I know that we've got customers that print on empty coffee bean sacks.
Yep. For repurposed for all wall art.
It's not just t-shirts.
Yeah, I mean, they print on stools. They print on canvas that they're going to put into cars.
Right.
You know, I mean, they don't actually print on the stool. They print on
the fabric that goes on the stool.
And then I've seen all these different things
aprons,
come through.
Aprons, hats.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things that come in that we talk about it in the t-shirt world.
Right.
But we have so many successful customers at Coleman and Company where we sell the ink that when they talk to us, they do these odd things that I said, I never even thought of that.
So really, I mean, like the story of DTG is one that just keeps getting better and more profitable all the time. I mean, you've heard, if you've listened to this whole podcast, about, you know, it was a little MacGyverish when it started, and then it was a little difficult and expensive and slow, and now it's just to the point where, you know, I walk into the showroom now and you look at the Viper 2. And it's as close to a load and print device. It's not, you know, there's some other things in front, but it's so much closer to anything that was even a generation before it. You know, it's a great start to any business.
Mm.
So we've talked about the nesting project, and we've talked about starting from scratch.
Uncomfortable silence.
Before we end up here today, I do want to talk about, we sell a lot of these to a lot of direct-to-garment printers, to screen printers.
Yep.
Could you just address a little bit, like, why that may or may not be a good idea?
We have broken them.
Okay.
It's been years, you know, it's been a building up that they've kind of realized that this is not going away. The improvements have certainly helped, right?
Right.
The small guys moving in and starting to chip away at the short run business for screen printers has helped, right? And so why is it a good idea? Why is it not a good idea? It's not a good idea if the screen printer wants to sit there and complain and compare cost of ink versus what it costs him to print a shirt on his $200,000 automatic press setup with everything he's got. And he seems to forget that it was a 12-screen job, that it took him a day to set up. He has, you know, $375 of labor into the setup. And, oh, by the way, $275 worth of screens. And
Right.
But there's a $1.75 worth of ink on the shirt versus 13 cents on his shirt that he printed on his automatic press.
Right.
That's when you don't want to buy it, when you can't get out of that mindset. When does a screen printer want to use it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of instances. The first one that only screen printers can appreciate is the day after you reclaim the screens for that job that you did for that big customer.
Right.
And he calls back and says, oh, I need 13 more. And what do you do as a screen printer? Well, just like any good red-blooded American would do, you take it in the shorts, you reburn the screens, you print the 13 shirts for the guy because he's a good customer and you don't want to lose him.
And you lose a huge amount of money on those 13 shirts.
And you lose time, and, you know, you've also allowed the customer to take control of you. Direct-to-garment printers is about not telling that customer no, and it's also about not losing money on the job. It's never good business to lose money.
Right.
Never, all right? It may be a prudent decision at times. It seems to make sense, but it's not a long-term. Definitely not a good policy.
So that same customer, the big customer, they come in on order, you know, an extra 13 shirts in what, Mark?
On digital or?
Yeah, on digital.
Yeah, I mean, what's great about the digital is, well, I mean, not only that customer, but we have to talk about all the scenarios about it, but you get to just say yes, you know, and print that out. But also, when you need to deliver, say, a sample or a short run or a run that's got some varying data on that. You know, the digital side of it just allows you to do that so quickly and easily, which that was the most exciting thing for me. And especially when we have our customers, they've got basically five inks that they buy. CM, YK, and W. And that's it. And they don't have gallons and tubs everywhere.
Right.
They don't have a mess that they have to clean up and put back together every single time. You know, these are all the little things that I think of when I've been to screen print shops, and when when there was a brief moment in time, we said, what if we carried screen printing ink? And then we look, whoa, look at this inventory that we have to carry.
Right, yeah.
You know? And it's, we carry CMYK and W.
Right.
So, I mean, that's is a fascinating thing about it. And to recreate that job is, I mean, it literally is opening up the RIP or Photoshop again.
Right.
And hitting print again.
Well, I think a big thing to it is we as an industry are learning how to educate screen printers. When I speak with a screen printer, what I'll tell them is, and obviously you paint the day after you reclaim the screen thing, because that's just like a good kick in the groin to get them down to their knees.
And they
so they're ready to listen.
I've said that before.
Yeah, and then they're like,
that just happened.
And so what you now let's soften the blow. So when you deliver that 360-piece order to the customer, hand them a digitally printed version, a free shirt of the same shirt, and go ahead and set the bar. Tell you what, Joe, when you call me back and need to order shirts, which you know you're going to do, you always
right.
do, I'm going to give you some options. We can screen print them like we did here. It's a, you know, I save your film, so it's only $15 a color to set up. It's a six-color job, $90 for the screens, and I'm going to have to do a minimum 72 shirts, but I'll give them to you at the same $8 I charge you for these shirts.
Right.
Or, hey, here's a free one. I wanted to give this to you. I can do it this way digitally. I'll do them one at a time, $14 a piece for you.
Right.
And now you've given him a free gift. You've let him make the decision long before the problem comes up.
And you're going to make $10 a shirt at least every time he reorders.
And,
right.
and everybody, it's a win-win-win situation.
Yeah, and you don't have to feel, because if they've ordered shirts before, and you're going to have customers that have ordered shirts plenty of times before, if they work for a school or a business and they fulfill this before, they know that, we didn't order one for Tammy. Well,
right.
we can't. I know we can't. Now, if you're given then that option to say, listen, this is all you have to do.
Right.
You just email me and say, I need a large.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you could do it. And that's just really cool.
That's huge. You know, the other side is adding on to sales. Most screen printers are not salespeople, right?
Shock.
They're producers. They're manufacturers, right? And they provide a service, I guess you would say. So how easy is it when you're delivering those shirts to have a golf towel printed up with the same logo on it or some other creative item like
it's
that?
It's almost physically impossible.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you hand them this golf towel that's got his logo on it, or let's say you know that he just had a baby, or you know he's turning 40. You know, you print up a shirt, lordy, look who's 40, where you're delivering, something like that. You deliver to him. You're setting the bar, number one. You're showing them your creativity and the ability to extend your range of stuff.
Right.
You're also telling them, hey, listen, the next time you order shirts, if you want some for your kids, right, or Uncle Bubba, who's been to the barbecue place a few too many times, I can take and I can fit that graphic to the shirt.
Oh, yeah. Talk about that a little bit more, because that's a really good thing.
It's I call it the 8-10-12 principle.
Okay.
And I got it because I used to do a lot of work printing shirts for women's organizations like the National Wild Turkey Federation's Women in the Outdoors. You would go to an event, it'd be 150 women at it, and you have an event shirt. And women come in all shapes and sizes. And it never failed. You would have the girl who wore a men's 2XL shirt standing next to the girl who weighed 87 pounds and wore an extra small...
Size zero.
Yeah, because we didn't have any children's size shirts. We put her into a baggy, extra small shirt. Right? And if the graphic worked right on one shirt, it was not going to work right on the other. The girl in the men's 2XL was going to look like she's wearing a postage stamp on her chest, or the girl with the extra small was going to have the graphic wrapping around under her arms.
Right.
So I started doing, when I would do these events, I would print shirts, smalls, extra smalls, maybe even a medium, in an 8-inch graphic, call it. And then for the larges, and maybe the extra large in the women's sizes, you go to a 10-inch graphic, and when you hit the men's size shirts, you'd use a 12-inch graphic. And when you looked at the shirts on the people, they fit. The graphic fit
the
body size.
The graphic is proportional
to the shirt. And so it didn't make anybody self-conscious, and it just gave you such...
Which I was playing along, that would be four separate screen printing jobs.
Mm-hmm. If it's a four-color job, 16
screens. 16 screens
at
X number of dollars, four separate setups, and all you do with DTG is grab the corner...
Shrink it out.
Graphic and move it.
That's what the visualization I had in my head, because if embroiderers are thinking about getting into this too, they're going to feel the pain of that, where if they need to do a little side of the arm logo and they also need to do a big, you know, left chest logo or a jacket back,
yeah.
they can't always just grab that and drag it yeah. and make it big on a DST file. The stitches are going to come apart. Yep. There's a lot of work to be involved. But if you wanted to print, you mentioned the baby, which I thought was, that's like the nice, perfect example. They just had a baby. They got a four-month-old at home, and you want to print a tiny little company shirt with him because
right.
you're printing hundreds of shirts
yeah.
and they're having a company barbecue.
Take a onesie
yeah.
and print on
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah, grab the corner, shrink it down, pop the little shirt on there and hit print at the end, and you just made that shirt. I mean, is you added 60 seconds more or less of work.
And the gravy on top of that is if you make a graphic 25% smaller, your ink costs go down by 25%.
Oh yeah.
You know
actually,
I mean?
Mathematically, that's not correct. It's probably more. But go ahead.
Good one. Okay.
Well, and we mentioned supplies earlier, and it kind of tied back into me, but this is to go with the ease of keeping your place stocked, and also about the success, because the supplies come under both of them. For one,
yeah.
if you only have to manage five colors and pre-treats, then that's a nice, easy thing to manage. And the folks who are screen printers and embroiderers generally, they can manage that pretty well because they're used to having to keep the entire color spectrum.
Right.
Now, people who are newer to the industry and not used to doing that sometimes have an issue just managing that ink.
Yeah.
So if you want to be successful, know that, for one, you know, just be grateful that you only have to manage these five things and pay attention to them. Our most successful customers call us up and they order most or all of their colors in one order.
Yeah.
So when we see an ink order come in, it's CMYK, a bunch of whites, or maybe, you know, some of them are heavy. They might have two
yeah.
black, you know, liters or something like that in there. It depends, you know, what colleges buy them that they're printing a lot of.
Right.
You know, UCF, black and gold, so they're going to have more yellow and black.
No one outside of Florida knows where that is.
No,
that's
it's
the University of Central Florida.
The largest university in the United States, I believe,
it
for
is,
attendance.
It is.
Yeah.
And nobody knows who they are.
And
yeah.
bowl winners, too. So more people
yeah,
know
Yeah, now they know a little bit.
They,
football,
yeah.
It's amazing. They have like 2 million students go there, but they did win a bowl game.
Yeah.
So now everybody
knows
where they're at, right?
But, you know, that's an example. And so the most successful ones, though, the point of the story is, are ordering their ink together. They're ordering enough pre-treatment. The
yeah.
ones that are typically talk about more of the struggles in their business are overnighting a small bottle of ink.
Yeah.
And they're ordering $40 worth of ink, and they're spending $45 to ship it.
And by the way, they're the ones that are complaining that they can't make any money.
Right. So,
yeah.
so and Mark did actually a great article on supply management. You should look for on the Coleman & Company blog, blog.coleman&company.com.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to make that, because we're running out of time here, we're going to make that the, you know, we'll do the last words here. So, so Mark, do you have anything to finish up with as far as your last words? Right?
Well, I mean, the final words on, for me, on garment
yeah.
printing are going to be on the supply side. It's just, it's so awesome to manage. And easy to manage. You've got
yeah.
so little things to take care of, and there are liquids that you can look at, and you can visually see how much you need. And sometimes that's harder with thread. You can estimate how much ink you're going to use with the software, so
right.
you can turn around and you can start. I mean, you can get down to the measurement of the liters and say, I'm going to need exactly this much ink. This is how much I have in stock. This is what I can order. So on the supply side, it's easy. The automation side of what we sell in order, cleaning solutions and flushing solutions to take care of the machine are all perfected. I don't want to say anything in the world is perfected, I should say.
Right.
That's an absolute statement to make. But it's gotten to the point now where the reliability is extremely high,
right.
Which is where you want to be. And I still find it exciting when I see a design that was literally just made going onto the shirt with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been I've sat at a computer myself and made something in Photoshop
right.
at 4:44, you know, and the shirt is done, and by 5 o'clock, I'm out the door.
Yeah.
And, you know,
5:01 on a really, really
yeah,
bad night
right.
and for Mark, by the way.
On the whole thing, I opened the doors here. So
right, okay.
That's okay.
Sure.
But yeah, I find that's just really exciting compared to most other processes out there. So it's just really cool to look at. And I don't know anybody, just like, even with embroidery too, I don't know how many people aren't still mesmerized to just stand over that shirt and
yeah.
look at it come out. It's awesome.
Okay, Don.
I'm just in awe of that was a last word.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I'm almost speechless. Which, just kidding. Crazy. Just kidding. No, and I will reiterate one thing that Mark said. I've been kind of at this since its very, very beginning, and I still get mesmerized. And I still sit there and look at it and go, wow, we're actually doing this. Direct-to-garment printing, you know, talk with your account manager. Be very real with them about what your expectations are, because too many people get into this with the wrong expectations that maybe could make it right if they went in with the right understanding, the right expectations of where it fits. This is not a replacement to traditional screen printing in all instances. It is, however, much better at addressing higher numbered quantities of shirts than most people expect. When you have it running right, you are an efficient setup.
Yeah.
Everything's working right. So, you know, be realistic about any piece of equipment that you fit. Don't buy the hype, right? Have real questions, real answers. If somebody, when you're talking to somebody about this equipment, and that includes if it's somebody here, you know, some newer people are going to not have the full picture of how the application is. If somebody immediately just starts throwing numbers at you and ROIs and things like this are going to sound like right now you're going to make $128 an hour, and if you can print, if you do that 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you're going to make $174,000 with this printer. Run and hide.
Right.
But it is
fine. Now I have to delete that article.
Nah, that's right. That's right. But it on the other side, it is a great tool. It's great for your creativity because you're no longer bounded by these finite colors. And it's an awesome opportunity for somebody who's really wanting to quit working for the man, can start a business on their own, work in a passion area for them.
Yeah.
You know, if you love whatever, lawn bowling or shih tzus or whatever it is, right?
We said this one. We said no cursing.
That's right. Well, you were talking about printing on stools. All right. But, you know, if you have this passion area, you can go in and you can make money at it.
Yeah.
You understand the people, and it kind of gives you some freedom, and that freedom might be long-term of moving away from a current job you're in, but it also may be, and we see this a lot, people who are looking at getting into an early retirement, but they want some residual income, why not do it in an area of passion? Maybe your passion is model trains, and you want to do shirts for guys who understand model train stuff.
And that's great because you can put a DTG printer in your house.
Yep.
Yeah.
You really can.
The Viper 2 will go right through a door.
So let me, if you throw it.
Well, you mentioned the house. I don't think we've said it, but we also, there's not really this heavy chemical cleaning.
It sucks to have a screen printing operation in your garage or in your house because of that.
Yeah, a lot of cities, you are not allowed to have a screen printing operation within city limits because of A, wastewater situations, and B, you have to vent.
A lot of water.
You do vent out, and you know there's some concerns about venting out those smells. In fact, Pinellas County and St. Petersburg, here in Tampa, in city limits, you're not allowed to run a commercial screen printing operation in a residential area based on zoning.
Right.
So this is something, though, you can throw into an extra room, a bedroom, and literally be up and running without anybody even knowing it.
And it's quiet and safe. So let me do my last word, because as a marketing guy who knows nothing about direct-to-garment printing at all, other than what I learned in this room today, my favorite thing about this whole business is that you get to say, when somebody asks, what do you do for a living, I print custom T-shirts. There is no one that you will ever say that to that will not want you to print some kind of a custom T-shirt. 100% of the people, what do? I print custom T-shirts. Cool, I've got this idea. So literally, every person that you meet, that you see, that you watch on television, that you see in the movies, is a potential customer for what you do. And there's no greater opportunity than having an almost unlimited market like that. So that's why I'm enthusiastic about direct. And I think that's it. I think that's it for this episode of Custom Apparel Startups. This has been Mark Stevenson from Coldesi.
And I'm Mark Vila of Coleman & Company. And
Don Copeland from Coldesi.
And I think we've had a good show. Remember, all the things we like to talk about at the end.
Yes, which I forgot about.
Yeah, no problem. If you're not already a member on Facebook, the Customer Apparel Startups Facebook group, It's a growing every single day. It grows. If you haven't joined yet,
yes.
You know you're missing out.
Are we at 1,000 yet?
Not, we're at like 998.
Yeah,
wow.
Really,
close. Driving me crazy.
Number 1,000, Mark will buy you a coffee from Starbucks.
And so we've got that CASpodcast.com. You can contact us on there. We love questions. We love comments. So that's a big thing to do. What else?
Visit us at coldesi.com and colemanandcompany.com. If you have any questions about anything that you heard today, you can also get answers there. You can see videos on the equipment. We've got a fantastic YouTube channel with more than 700 videos, at least 25 or 30 good ones. At YouTube, it's Coldesi Coleman is the name of the YouTube channel, so you can search for that as well.
Yeah, and there's videos going up, I mean, weekly, more
yes.
than weekly, you know, sometimes daily.
Today, so.
Yeah, there's videos going up all the time. We've got multiple blogs. We haven't mentioned that, but we've got a Coleman and Company blog, and we've got a Coldesi blog that Mark and I and others both contribute to. So there's a lot of information, and if you go to CASpodcast.com, that's one place where you can go to where you can find links to all this stuff.
Yep,
webinars, too. We do a handful of webinars every month.
Yeah.
So that gives you the opportunity to interact with us directly as well, because we do take live questions during those webinars. Great opportunity when you're getting to that point where you really want to drill down and you're ready to make a step for your business, because you get to hear the questions that other people ask.
Right.
Which is huge. I've had so many people say, I learned from the questions that you were answering that I didn't think to ask.
As a matter of fact, I wish you were listening to this live, because in an hour we have a live online demonstration on the Viper 2 Direct Your Garment printers.
Correct.
Well, good. Thanks everyone for listening.
Yep. Have a good night.